Hello, beautiful beings, and thank you for joining us for our third episode of Just Being. I'm Nikki.
And I'm Kirsty. Today we're going to be talking about how to be your authentic self when society and social influences are trying to tell you who you should be. In the words of the classic 90s dance anthem, you're free to be who you want to be.
Authenticity and self-acceptance are such vast and important topics to talk about. I remember thinking so many times over the years, I have no idea who I really am. Right through my teens, early 20s, and probably until around when I turned 30. I think often for people, our teenage years are for almost trying on different personalities. Our 20s are where we really start to work out who we are. And for me anyway, 30s are then about exploring and refining that, refining our values and our passions. I'm obviously yet to find out what 40s are all about. Maybe it's then a case of just going through several cycles of expanding and refining our true self over the years. It's also interesting to consider here what shapes who we are. The whole nature versus nurture argument. Yes, we are born with certain traits, but our experiences have huge sway. Our childhoods play a massive role in how we turn out, our relationships with our parents, watching how they engage with each other and other people, our early interactions with friends. I restarted therapy this year and have been exploring how much of my identity or actions is actually learned behaviours rather than coming from who I am deep down from a place of authenticity. That's one of the reasons therapy can be so helpful. It gives you the tools and the awareness to start unpicking that.
Yes, exactly that. The compromises and adaptations we make to our personalities start at such a young age. I remember one of the first times that I conformed and changed my opinion to fit in was when I was about 7. Me and my friends were at school talking about our favourite Spice Girls. Up until then, mine had been Mel C. So much so that on my previous birthday, I dressed in a black tracksuit and a crop top and stuck a sticker on my nose pretending I had a nose piercing. I'd also had my high kick perfected. Anyway, back to the classroom, where my very important life choice of who my favourite Spice Girl was met with disagreement and judgment by my friends. Apparently, Mel C was not cool with them. So because I wanted to fit in, from that day on, Victoria became my favourite. Cut to 20 years later, and my friend's daughter, who was about 7 at the time, said she wanted to go to book day dressed as Spider-Man. She loved that Spider-Man outfit, but because her friends had laughed at her outfit choice, she decided to change and go as a Disney princess, the same as all of her friends. It broke my heart, and I so wanted her to just be able to do her own thing and keep her individuality rather than conform because of the fear of being judged.
Those are such good examples, and I can so relate to that. I've constantly adapted how I act or how I speak or dress to fit in over the years, all for that fear of judgment. I wanted to be an actress for most of my childhood and into my early teens, and it was when I got old enough to start letting in that dreaded comparison or fear of judgment that I started to believe I wasn't pretty enough or thin enough, which is ultimately what killed that dream. I've also always been quite well spoken, and from about the age of 12, my peers started to say it made me snobby. Not sound snobby, was snobby, and they'd make fun of me for it. So I used to actively try and speak with more slang or drop my H's. It sounds like such a minor thing, but how we speak is so ingrained with our identity. And as you say, it's even worse for those growing up now, with the pressures of social media hitting them at such a young age. They constantly have this pressure to look their best, as they might be snapped in a photo at any time and tagged. The digital world seems to be so geared towards perfection, with no space for any of these perceived flaws. And on top of that, they're being bombarded with the daily comparisons of all the other social accounts they follow, or images of magazines telling them how they should look, act, and dress in order to be pretty or cool.
I actually had a really similar experience at secondary school. Up until year 6, I also wanted to be an actress. And then after years of bullying at secondary school, it knocked that confidence out of me. And I've never kind of looked back to that dream again since then. But not only have we had a lifetime of adapting to what society or our peer group consider to be acceptable, According to evolutionary psychologists, we are also battling a programme that stems back tens of thousands of years, back to our hunter-gatherer days. It reinforces the need for us to do whatever it takes to be accepted by society or the tribe that we find ourselves living in. Back in those days, being rejected or outcast would mean lack of protection, shelter, resources, and most likely lead to death. So this is a strong subconscious belief that has evolved to keep us safe.
That's so interesting. I didn't know that, but it does make so much sense. And I guess we've translated tribes into cliques at school, playing out that kind of ingrained scenario, consciously or not, which can be good in some ways for kids and teenagers to find their like-minded friends, but is also so limiting. I know when I was growing up, someone deemed as a goth could never be a jock or a cheerleader as well, and popular kids shouldn't listen to heavy metal or reggae music. It was very restricting, with little space for genuine expression outside of some predefined rules. But if this fear of being judged or excluded is so deeply rooted in our DNA, it's no wonder it's so hard to overcome.
Exactly. Society just expects us to put ourselves in a box, and there can't be any kind of overlap with our different personality traits. And I think because of that, most of us, to some extent, have experienced social anxiety at some point in our lives. It could be from being asked to speak to a large group of people or from going on a first date. I know I've experienced social anxiety on many occasions. In a way, I think there is some comfort in knowing that this comes from a deeply rooted survival instinct and it's just part of being human.
True. And I've also struggled with social anxiety many times in the past, but it can make you miss out on so many experiences. And even if you do manage to work through the panic to get out and go somewhere, you can end up spending the whole night worrying about how you're coming across or what people are thinking about you, rather than just having some fun and enjoying being in that moment with your friends. I think I found this particularly hard during my time at uni. It felt like everyone else was making friends and being themselves so much easier than I could. But in reality, a lot of us were probably going through the same thing. It just wasn't talked about. I do wonder if this is partly why people are so drawn to the idea of not being themselves. Children love playing pretend, and even as adults, a lot of us, myself included, are really into fancy dress or cosplay, which does seem to be a growing trend. Or even in relationships, you'll find roleplay. These are much more judgment-free spaces to explore different parts of our identities.
Yeah, I can completely relate to this, especially with the fancy dress. Up until I was about 27, I would have a fancy dress party for my birthday every year. Most of my friends would really be up for joining in with it. And I think you're right. It's because it gives us the chance to immerse in the creative and playful side of our personalities, something that comes so naturally to us when we're children, but sadly is often overshadowed by fear and responsibility in our adult lives. Children are so in the moment and seem to have life all worked out. They don't have any filter, they just say what's on their minds. I'm sure some parents can find this really embarrassing at times, and at other times they probably agree and were thinking along the lines of what their child was about to say anyway, but they can never say this openly and honestly as a respectable adult. I've heard that part of the reason children are so free and happy is that they are naturally in the moment, every moment. And that one of the first times that they're taken out of the moment is when they are asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? At that age, we still dream big. The sky's the limit. Literally, you might have had the belief in yourself at 6 that you could have been an astronaut. If you're feeling disconnected from your authentic self or from what you really want in life, it might help checking in with your past self, that inner child, and ask yourself, what was my answer to that question the first time I was asked? What did I dream about? What did I love to learn and talk about? What were my natural talents or gifts? You could try grabbing a pen and paper or your journal and just write the first things that come to mind. You might come up against some resistance with thoughts like, oh, that skill or passion would never make me any money in real life, or that isn't a real job. When you get thoughts like this, just try to push past that adult filter and just let your inner child take the lead. Also, I think it's important to remember that it's never too late in life to change your path or your job or your identity and to find your authentic self.
Walking your own path.
So how can we start to strip away the layers of adaptations we've made to our personalities over the years? to find out who we are and what we truly want from life.
Taking time to be by yourself, even if it's uncomfortable, I think is a good place to start, as the best way to get to know anyone is to spend time with them. One of the things that terrified me most when my last relationship was coming to an end was the idea of being alone. At this time, Florence, from the podcast FKS Given, was going through a breakup herself, and she said something that really helped me. She said her therapist gave her the task of listing down all the things she could do on herself alone, purely for herself, no matter how small. So I did just that. I started writing very simple things like stroking my dog, painting my nails, taking an uninterrupted bath, and these grew to reading a book in the evening with no background noise, cooking and eating only the things I liked, dancing around the house to whatever I wanted. I kept this list so I could refer to it if I got stuck or ever felt lost in the evenings, but I actually never needed to. Just writing it down reminded me of how many things there are to do in your own company. For anyone going through a breakup or even just struggling with feelings of loneliness, which many of us are after lockdown, I think this would be one of my biggest suggestions. I'll actually share a picture of my list on Instagram in case it inspires anyone. My time living alone has gone from being something I was terrified about to actually giving me so much confidence. I feel more connected to myself than I ever have before, and as a serial long-term relationshipper and people pleaser to boot, it showed me for the first time in ages how I can have fun on my own and what that looks like. Even if it's just sitting in my PJs working on a paint by numbers while Baloo, my dog, falls asleep with his head on my lap. Heaven. I know in future I'll be much less afraid of the idea of evenings alone, which is a much healthier dynamic for both myself and my partner.
I completely agree. Getting used to being in your own company and taking time to build that relationship with your inner self is so important, especially before you get into a relationship, because it means that you're less likely to settle for things in life that aren't meant for you, or just gives you more courage to go for your dreams, regardless of if other people believe in them as much as you do.
Yeah, that's so true. It's just that tuning in to what you really want rather than getting swept up in making compromises. Along with changing yourself for other people, though, there are other influences which can impact finding your authentic self. So being a relationship can be one, but also chemical influences such as medication. I was on antidepressants for 2 years and have also been taking birth control since I was 16, so for more than half my life. I decided to stop both of these this year, and it's been a really interesting experience. This wasn't anything to do with wanting to start trying for a little one, but because I wanted to know who I was without the chemicals in my system. I'm definitely less irritable and anxious since stopping the pill than I've been in years, and also actually got my sex drive back, which has massively helped me reconnect with that side of my personality, which for me is so important. Although I think both of these examples of medication can be invaluable to people, I do wish that GPs gave more information on the ways they can actually change you as a person. I remember when I turned 16, going on the pill was just the standard thing to do. There were no conversations at all around the pros and cons or even other options.
Yeah, absolutely. It's scary how it's just such a standard thing to do, and without having the full picture of how it could affect your thoughts or your moods.
It's putting chemicals in your body, so it's going to change who you are.
Exactly. And there are also many outside influences and opinions to contend with in general, especially now we're living in an age where we have the blessing and curse that is the internet. Social media can be a great way of sharing ideas and connecting with new people, but as you briefly mentioned, it can also have a downside. Sometimes it encourages us to be hard on ourselves by comparing the parts of our lives that we feel the least happy with someone else's highlights reel. I think C.S. Lewis was onto something when he said, "Comparison is the thief of joy."
Definitely. I mean, turning 30, it's so difficult not to compare yourself to what other people are going through and where they are at their point of their lives. I've got friends who are married and having children, buying houses, and I'm here renting and I've got my dog. It's really difficult not to get wrapped up in the fact of, is this where I should be? It's not what other people are doing. But actually, everyone's on their own path that is right for them. And again, something I heard in an FKS Given episode, I do feel like I'm majorly fangirling for them over here, but they do have so many useful tips, is the concept of radical self-acceptance. The idea here is not just practicing self-love for the parts of you that you really like, but accepting all of yourself. Everyone, very much myself included, can be a bit of a dick sometimes. Even when I try to use those grounding tips we spoke about last week, everyone has bad days, no one is perfect all the time, and you will never love all of the things you say or do. But everything is still part of what makes you you. It is possible to accept, and eventually maybe even love yourself fully, while also acknowledging that there are things that you want to work on, and there's always room for self-growth. Life would be boring if we were all perfect each and every day, and we'd never have anything to learn and grow from. There's a beautiful quote from actress Sophia Bush, which says something along the lines of, "We can be both a work of art and a work in progress simultaneously."
I love this concept, and I think it's so true. It can be easy on your self-discovery path to want to put pressure, or just automatically putting pressure on yourself to have to be perfect and feeling like you're going to get to that final place where you're happy with everything in your life and every aspect of yourself and your personality. But as you say, we are a work in progress, and that's what makes life fun. Another quote that you've just reminded me of, I think it's actually from an Aerosmith song, is that I love, is life's a journey, not a destination. But having said that, sometimes it is easier to be yourself when you're on your own or with your loved ones that you've known for years. But how can we bring our authentic selves to the one place we spend most of our waking life, the workplace?
Well, I've definitely found that being open and honest with my colleagues and my managers about my mental health has taken a massive weight off. In my last job, after being diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder, I decided to tell everyone about it in a team meeting, and it was absolutely terrifying. But I had so many of them come up to me afterwards and thank me for sharing that. I'm very lucky in that the team I'm in at the moment have weekly check-ins on our stress and engagement, where we're actively encouraged to be open and honest. So I can just say I'm having a bad week, or a good week. It was scary at first, but I do now openly talk about my generalised anxiety disorder the same way I would about having a good or bad physical health day, like having the flu or going through an injury, which is ideally what I'd like to see every workplace dynamic get to. I do also hope the fact that I'm quite so transparent about my mental health might encourage my colleagues to feel they can do the same.
Definitely. Honesty is the best policy when it comes to these kind of subjects.
For sure. Also, there's growing awareness and communication about neurodiversity. I'm dyslexic, which I've always felt a bit weird about, especially as someone who did English at university and is now in marketing as a career. Like, it made me less valuable or intelligent. But it's really important to be honest with your employers and embrace those parts of yourself, because even though there are certain things I do find more challenging than a lot of people, like getting overwhelmed when there's a lot of stimulation around me, like colleagues talking and laughing, or my spelling getting worse when I'm stressed or under pressure, but there are also things that I'm good at and situations where I thrive that I know make me a good employee. Like a lot of people with dyslexia, I actually thrived in the work from home environment, and having it has made me much more thorough when checking my work. And I know my anxiety also helps me think really quickly. All those worrying thoughts of what could go wrong comes in surprisingly handy for risk planning for events, for example. It's still very much a work in progress, but I'm trying to see both my dyslexia and my anxiety as superpowers, not kryptonite.
That's great. So by actually being honest and open about all parts of your personality, you've actually helped to create a better working environment for yourself.
Yes, and I do really hope it might inspire others to be open and honest too. Interestingly, I think one possible silver lining for all the darkness that came from COVID was that for a lot of people, they have been forced to merge work and life to a higher degree than many of us have ever done before. Kids and pets were suddenly on meeting video calls, including my dog Baloo. People felt less need to dress in their work clothes, especially after the first 6 months. And a lot of people who usually commuted were suddenly working from home, which made it more possible to reconnect with themselves and their passions. They had more time to spend with families or to start a hobby. And I know some people on my team started up old hobbies they had stopped making time for. Also during lockdown, there was a very interesting and noticeable change towards wearing comfortable clothes or wearing less or no makeup. None of the girls in my team wear makeup now when we join team meetings, and I'll happily rock up to video calls in my Lucy and Yak dungarees and makeup-free face without even thinking twice about it. It's actually helped me feel so much more connected to myself. There's often that commentary about women putting on their masks and suit of armour when they get made up and putting on their suit or a fancy dress, which can definitely have its benefits, but it is also good to strip that away. I'm so much more used to my natural face now, and I see it as a special occasion when I put my makeup on. I know you're the same, Kirsty.
Yep, 100%. I'm so glad that more people are embracing the natural look. And like you say, I might push the boat out with some mascara and eyeliner once in a while, but in general, I like having less chemicals on my face and more time and money to spend on adventures rather than doing something that I'll wash off in 12 hours' time. Having said that, I do think your makeup can be a fun, creative outlet. Going back again to that inner child, how much did we love to raid our mum's makeup bag as children? I know I wore more makeup when I was 7 than I do now, but back then it didn't matter if my lipstick was smudged or if I had different colour eyeshadow on each eye. It was just about having fun and being creative. So I think it's the mindset and the reason why you spend hours doing your makeup every day is the question that you might want to ask. Is it fueled by creativity, fun, and a love of colour and glitter and a form of self-expression? Or is it comparison and low self-esteem running the show? Are you doing it for yourself or for someone else? Because you don't think that they will love you just for the natural, beautiful being that you are.
You're so right. And actually, over the last few years of lockdown, when I do wear makeup, there are an awful lot more colours and glitter sneaking in than ever before. And that's one of the reasons I love doing my makeup for a festival quite so much. If anyone does happen to go over to my Instagram page, you will see many pictures of me going all out for a festival or fancy dress party. And I know the vibe then is never about trying to look my most sexy or my most beautiful. It's just about having fun and expressing myself. I think if you do want to wear makeup, that's no problem. But as you say, do it for you, because it's what you want. But how can people start making these steps towards loving ourselves? So, affirmations is a good one. I have a wonderful book from Megan Rose Lane, which has space for daily affirmations, and even suggestions of ones you can use if, like me, you struggle to think of nice things to say to yourself. Mirror work is also a great one. One of my favourite things to see on the internet is young kids doing mirror work. And if they can do it, why can't we? You don't have to go straight in with saying, I love myself. That can feel impossibly hard at the start. But I like myself. Or even finding just one thing you like and saying that, whether it's to do with your appearance, like, I like my eyes, I have a nice smile. Or your personality, like, I make people laugh, I'm creative, I'm a good mum. It can honestly be anything. And then next week, try to think of something else.
Yep, I love an affirmation. One of my favourite ones at the moment, or when I'm doing something new, like starting a podcast, is I am capable, just to help give myself that self-belief that I can learn and create new things. I've used affirmations on and off over the years, and there are some good guided meditation channels on YouTube for them. One of the first ones I started off with was Jason Stevenson. He's still one of my favourites because he's got a lovely, soothing Australian accent. And listening to them as you fall asleep is a good way to fast track getting those positive beliefs wired into your subconscious. So I've only recently started looking at myself in the mirror sometimes while saying my affirmations. And I did find that a bit cringy to start with, but wow, they feel so much more supercharged when I'm giving myself that eye contact as I'm saying these things. I think it's the same way that when you give eye contact to another person in a conversation, it just gives it more depth and meaning. Shine like the star that you are.
There are so many benefits that can come from living life on your own terms and being your most authentic self, such as finding better friends or even a partner that you really connect with, as you're showing them your genuine self, and hopefully they also feel safe to do the same. Like us, Kirsty. We bonded over our desire to be fully the weird and wonderful people that we are, even though we were both going through quite bad social anxiety at the time. I know so much of my fear of being authentic came from a deep longing to connect, but it was actually just making it harder. My partner and me have both really been through it mental illness-wise and have been on long journeys to acknowledge and work on ourselves. And that gives us such a deeper connection because we're more aware of our triggers and more aware of who we each are. And it also gives us endless things to talk about because, like us, we're very interested in the workings of the brain. Also, it's so much less draining if you embrace yourself for who you are. You don't have to love yourself right now. That takes time, and I think a journey a lot of us spend most of our lives trying to get to. But hating uses so much energy.
Yeah, you've just brought those feelings back to me when we first became friends in the office. And I remember you inviting me round back to yours with some of your friends, and I had to really push through that social anxiety. Just the fear of being in a new situation with new people, and even though I really wanted to come round and join you, the nerves were hard for me to get past. I'm so glad that we did, because we wouldn't have this friendship that we have now, and it's sad to think that I might have missed out on that just because in that moment my social anxiety took over and I couldn't get past it. It is easier said than done, but I think it does open up so many more opportunities for you if you can try and find ways to manage it or challenge it.
I'm so glad you did. We wouldn't be starting a podcast right now if you hadn't.
Exactly. So in our last episode, Gratitude, Grounding and Giggles, I mentioned that I went to see John Bishop live recently, and he told a story that relates to how being your authentic self can open up doors of opportunity. He explained that when he was in his 30s, he was feeling really down and out after his divorce and being a weekend dad to his kids. He said that he hated Mondays after the kids had gone home, and he always found himself at a loose end. So I think he said he saw a flyer for like an open mic night and thought he might as well pop along to watch. They were also offering free entry to anyone that got up on stage, so he thought, why not save a fiver? I've got nothing really interesting to say, I'm not at a great point in my life, but I might as well get up on stage. He then went on to say that when he got there were only about 7 people in the audience, and out of the 7, 5 of them were going to get up to perform. So the first guy got up, and his whole act was just chicken impressions, like a chicken driving, a chicken playing football. And John basically said to himself, he was thinking at the time, what am I doing here? Like, what's going on? Being at home would be better by myself than, you know, being here watching this. And he said he was so ready to walk out, and if it wasn't for the fate that his name was called up next, then he would have been out the door. So after the chicken impression guy, John got up and he thought, I've got no idea what I'm going to say. He hadn't written or prepared anything. He wasn't feeling in a very jovial mood with everything that was going on in his life. But he ended up talking just honestly and openly about how he felt and things that were going on in his life and how hard his divorce had been on him. So after the gig, the owner of the venue and organiser of the night came up to him and they asked if he wanted to come back every Monday to perform, because they'd obviously seen something, like a natural hidden talent that he wasn't even aware of himself. I just love the fact that he hadn't set out to be a stand-up comedian. He hadn't even written any jokes for when he got up on stage that night. He was just in the moment, being authentically himself. And even though it might have not been funny to him, because what he was talking about was serious and stuff that was going on in his life that he was really down about, it's made him stumble into a career that he now loves, just by being his most authentic self and wearing his heart on his sleeve and expressing his raw emotions in that moment. So my point is, I really believe that when we are on the right path in life, or even times when we could do with a little redirection, the universe will bring us the situations and people that we need at the right time. So when we stop trying to be something that we're not, and don't filter our true thoughts and feelings or try and fit into a box that we don't belong in, it makes it easier for the universe to work its magic for us.
You allow that room for growth when you're being authentic. It's so much easier to find a path, your path, when you're tuned in and embracing all of you, your values and your passions, rather than fighting or running from it. And so here we find ourselves starting a podcast. We will try to bring our most authentic selves to you each week. And we are learning how to get over the fear of judgment while also going through our own journeys towards self-acceptance.
Absolutely. And this was part of the reason we decided on the name Just Being for the podcast. because we believe that you are enough just by being the beautiful being that is you.
So thank you for listening. We really do hope you enjoyed this episode and found some of the tips useful. You can find us on social media as Colour Me Happy with two E's and me, and Holista Kirsty, that's one word with no C. We also have an Instagram for the show called JustBeing_podcast, where we will share updates on upcoming episodes and quotes that inspire us.
We're just starting up, so it would mean the world to us if you could like this episode or the show. And if you have any questions or constructive feedback, we would love to hear it. Just drop us a DM on our show Insta, or you can email us at justbeing_podcast@hotmail.com. Goodbye, lovely listeners, and until next time, remember to just be yourself.
Join us next time when we'll be talking about the meaning of Christmas and share our tips on having a more environmentally and financially economical festive season.